I'm sure you've heard the stories of Quetzalcoatl and Viracocha, the civilizer god kings that were said to have come to South America after the Great Flood. But were you aware that there's a Peruvian myth of a civilizer god king that was said to have come before the Great Flood and that the flood pretty much wiped his people out? It's kind of funny that you don't hear this spoken about anymore in the alternate history community, although it used to be. And there are some archaeologists and historians that weigh in on it, but not very many anymore. So let's talk about the myth of Namelap and his people. Hi, I'm Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. The first written account of the Namelap myth crops up in 1586 and was written by Miguel Cabello de Balboa. In it, he goes through the beginning and the end of this noble bloodline and one of the offshoots. This is not the only account, but it is the most thorough. The other account that comes up is about 200 years later, and it came up pretty much on its own, so this does add a lot of veracity to the idea that this is an original indigenous people myth and has very little Spanish influence, because these two were very similar over 200 years apart. Now, the story begins with Namelap showing up in northern Peru with a huge number of people in tow and their culture intact, including artifacts and all kinds of stuff. So many people were said to have been with him that he had 40 in his entourage, including like a makeup artist and a person in charge of bathing him and all kinds of goofy stuff. He showed up on a massive fleet of balsa boats, and there was a bunch of concubines on him. After they arrived, Namelap led them into the interior where they looked for a place to settle. When they found an appropriate place, they built a temple dedicated to this giant green statue of Namelap himself, it was supposed to be, that there was their god, basically. And they built the temple around it, and then they started a cult, basically, in the entire region that was dedicated to the worship of this god. Now, when Namelap grew old and he knew death was near, he had his attendants bury him in his house and then tell all the people that he had sprouted wings and flown away of his own accord. This caused a lot of people in the area to like freak out, and they started leaving and going and searching for him all over the region, many never to return. Now, his son did a similar thing, except for instead of being buried in his home, he was interred deep in the ground, and then they told everybody the same kind of thing. He just disappeared on his own. This also caused a lot of people to leave, but in his case, he'd also sent a lot of people out. He had had so many children that many of them went out with the intention of starting up their own little dynasties. Now, the chronicle continues on in the capital city of Chote, speaking of those who remained and a few more descendants of the king, and eventually you get to the last king, and Fempelec, I believe is how it's pronounced, and he was just hell-bent on moving them to a different area. So he kept trying to move that big green stone god, and he couldn't do it. He failed multiple times. So finally, he's like approached by the devil, but the devil is disguised as a woman, and he ends up sleeping with the woman, and then it begins to rain for 30 days and 30 nights. And with the end of that time, after everything's flooded out and a bunch of people die and everything's messed up and all these crops die, and a year later, there's still no good food. And so the remnants of his people tie his hands behind his back and chuck his ass into the sea and say, well, maybe this will fix everything. And well, lo and behold, it did. And that was the end of him. One of the dynasties that had split off from Namelap's tribe in the early days continued on all the way until the Spanish arrived. However, they were vassals of another city by that time. But they were still around then. And that's basically the myth in a nutshell. Now, there's a few things that are noteworthy to alternate historians like myself, and the first thing would be that they show up with their culture intact. They don't show up with like a piecemeal culture or one that's like seemingly falling apart. They have artifacts, they have big groups of people and an entire like pecking order established and stuff, and that says that whatever culture they came from was pretty robust. The second thing that's noteworthy would be the fact that they were moving a stone by boat that later dudes couldn't move across the ground. So that does heavily imply that the ancients knew something that the later people did not, right? Obviously, if dude tries multiple times and you can't do it. And the statue itself is pretty noteworthy. I mean, a giant green statue does sound a little reminiscent of the jade tablets of Thoth, doesn't it? Or maybe it's copper, maybe it's just slightly rusted copper, and this is an object of some sort of ancient high technology, right? I mean, there's a lot of tantalizing little tidbits you can go down with this here whole rabbit hole. And if you believe in ancient high technology, the fact that they were supposed to have been around before the floodwaters does kind of make them a good candidate for that. It's not hard to see why this shows up in older books about the lost civilization stuff. I mean, this is pretty interesting things all in all. It sounds like another version of a Viracocha myth, but with some seriously older elements involved. But what does science have to say about this? Have they found any evidence of this, or is this all a complete myth? Well, in 1980, archaeologist Christopher Donnan started investigating a site known as Chotuna and Chonornkap. Sorry, I know my pronunciation suck. It's named that because of the two pyramids that dominate the site. And the Chotuna pyramid is believed by some, including him, to have been dedicated to that god Namelap. In a book that's named after those two pyramids that I can't pronounce, Christopher Donnan not only digs into the legend, but he also investigates the site and has a few conclusions that he makes. Originally, he believed he would find pottery or something that would prove that the Moche people were the Namelap people, but that's not what he found at all. Instead, he found a bunch of different pottery, some enclosures, a bunch of different stuff, including evidence of copper smelting. With the ore being brought to the site from all around the region, and the site being around 1,200 years old from the earliest layers that we can date. So this may well be the place that Namelap brought his people to. However, as the archaeologist himself says, the idea was not to prove or disprove that Namelap had once existed, Donnan explained. That wouldn't be possible. If you thought you knew where Camelot was and you organized a 3-year excavation of the site, how would you know that King Arthur was real or that he lived there? Even if you found a big round table, could you then be able to say, this is Camelot? Not likely, the archaeologist said. So we can't say for certain that this is the place of the Namelap legend. I mean, the excavations are still continuing to this day, and they found 3 separate times of occupation in the site where the site was conquered a couple of different times. There's different types of sacrifice and ritual mutilation going on at the site. The site definitely has a lot of age and history involved in it, and it definitely saw the changing of the times, sometimes in the same culture, other times when a different culture would come and knock the old one out. So Donnan posits that it's possible that an El Nino came along and caused that terrible flood that caused the year of famine afterwards, and that that's what caused them to chuck the king into the sea. Now, that's interesting as hell on the one hand. On the other hand, it either means that it was like the very first El Nino that they'd experienced in a long time, or that they had relocated when dude was said to have tried to move the idol and he couldn't. That they'd relocated because if they'd been there for a long time, that weather pattern happening, they would have been used to it and known what to expect, and they wouldn't have blamed it on God or something, or sleeping with the devil or whatever. So that seems a little bit off to me, but it is still a pretty interesting possibility. So where do I stand on all this? Well, don't forget to check out my Patreon and like and subscribe. Fine, I'll quit fence sitting. All right. I think that them bringing a big rock there that they couldn't move later, that's an intriguing part of the story. I think that being like the Emerald Tablet of Thoth or being an object of high technology, that's not so convincing to me, although it is minorly interesting, the similarities. It's far more intriguing to me is the confirmation of the Viracocha or the Quetzalcoatl myth, this being an account that shows up with flood legends attached to it and the same kind of showing up and civilizing and taking over an area, but not in the same vein exactly as the other ones. And it does seem like somewhat more detached from the biblical side of things. That's just a little bit of an opinion on my part. But again, this is the part we're talking about, my opinion, so deal with it. Now, it's possible that for whatever reason, if you became a civilizer god king, you needed to have come from the sea, like Quetzalcoatl or Viracocha. That's possible that became a trope and was attached to all the civilizer god kings down the road. We don't really know. Well, the El Nino thing is interesting, but it does require some assumptions. I mean, either it was the first El Nino that they'd experienced in a very long time, it was a far worse one than normal, or that they had relocated and were therefore hit far harder than they had been in the past. Now, it's still a pretty interesting possibility, but that one I'm kind of more on the fence about, thinking that that's a great example of like a smaller flood and stuff, but I think that the fact that the whole flood myth got tied into the whole thing thinks this is more attached to the Viracocha Quetzalcoatl thing, and it just got some, maybe there was an El Nino that got mixed up into that myth or something. But the El Nino thing is definitely interesting. I don't find it extremely compelling one way or the other. Ultimately, because they have not found anything for certain at that site, I would lump this into that same category of the King Arthur thing. We don't know. It's interesting. It's a great myth. It ties into other myths in the area, but we just don't know. Which makes it great fodder for the alternate history community, which is why I'm really curious as to why I haven't heard about it until recently when I started doing research into it. At the very least, it shows that the Quetzalcoatl Viracocha myth was something the indigenous people believed in heavily, as this one cropped up twice, and this seems to show up in a lot of different places with different attributes, but some of them the same, particularly coming from the sea, civilizing the area, and something to do with some horribly great deluge. And that really is so weird to me. It's just, how did it get lost like this? It's like, you look on YouTube and there's like a traditional Peruvian band by this name, and every now and again you'll find like some 50 view kids type of video that's to teach kids about this myth. But there's nothing about it in the alternate history community anymore, barely at all. And again, you don't really even hear historians talk about it a whole lot. So tell your friends about this. A great way to do it is to share this video. Thank you so much for watching this far. I really appreciate it. I make a lot of content like this, so if you enjoy this middle of the road type of takes on these things, this is the place for you. We'll see you next time.